Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Chad, today we get to talk to Hailey Kiyoko.
Yes, we do.
She is a pop star. She is a musician, a director. She's getting into doing writing. She wrote a screenplay and is also a partner with Becca Tilley, who we had on recently.
Hailey was very charming. She reminded me that it is very charming to be yourself. She felt very earnest and thusly very charming. She was not trying to be cute.
No, she wasn't. And that, I love the way you just said that, Chad. She reminded me of how charming it is to be yourself.
Mm-hmm.
That's one I want to like, I'll wake up in the middle of the night and think about that. Hailey Kiyoko is definitely herself. Producer Rachel and I were lucky enough to meet her and Becca in line at the Harry Styles concert last year. I have not gone back again this year because my boyfriend Harry's been ill. She is a real light, a real creative force, and I love how sure she is of herself and her queerness and how she wants to put that at the center of all of her storytelling. I really liked her a lot. So here she is, Hailey Kiyoko. You're in a recording studio right now.
Yeah, well, I have a recording studio behind me.
What are you working on?
I was on tour and I literally got home last week. So I am trying to rest this weekend. So I'm trying not to work on things, but it's exciting. I have my new album, Panorama, that's been out. And so I've just been, you know, working it, getting it out there.
Where'd you go on your tour?
We did 30 shows. So we just went all over the U.S.
And solo? You?
No, I was with Lauv. Do you know that artist? He's got a lot of great music. He has that song, I Like Me Better Than When I'm With You.
Oh, yeah. So are you best friends now or do you never want to see each other again? But not that soon.
Oh, no. He's so cool. Ari's awesome. We had a really... It's cool because a lot of times when you're on tour, you don't see each other much. But we all hung out a lot. And I hadn't been on tour since the pandemic. And so it was definitely rough for my body because sleeping in a bunk bed on the tour bus and it just like shaking every single night.
Oh my God.
I just got used to not having that in my life. And so having it in my life, I didn't sleep very well. So I'm very happy to be home, but I also had an amazing time as well.
How long does 30 dates take an average human to do?
It's 6 weeks.
6 weeks. And were you solo?
Yeah.
Like you went alone or did you bring along all the...
I have my band. Yeah. Okay. So I have my drummer and my guitarist. And when I do a headlining tour in February, I'll probably have dancers. Being on stage is my favorite thing. You know, as an artist, you have that one moment where it just really fuels your soul. Like being on stage is that for me. And so I have to go through so many hoops and loops to get there, right? I have to write a song. Mm. I have to record the song. I have to direct a music video. I've released the video. Mm. I have to hopefully maybe get a tour. I hopefully have to sell the tickets. But once you finally get on the stage and you have that moment and you get to express yourself and see fans screaming with passion, the lyrics, it is the most incredible feeling. And it's obviously very much worth it because you're like, this is why I do what I do. Like I grew up dreaming of being on stage, but to get on that actual stage
takes so much.
So you are a performer. It sounds like that's in your nature because that seeing people scream back at you like that turns a key in you specifically. Do you feel like that's just a human thing? Do you think any human being would get up there and feel that same, I don't know, like what's the word, like euphoria to experience that? Or is that like I mean, you're both performers. So is that, do you think that's a thing that's you?
I think it sounds terrifying, but mostly if I could sing though, like she can sing and she can dance, which blows my mind because I understand the idea of singing. I feel like it. I get it. Dance is so mm-hmm. beyond me. And I watch you in your videos directing yourself dancing. You did. Is it
Gravel to Tempo?
Gravel to Tempo when you're dancing in the cafeteria in front of all those girls yeah. alone. Chad, she's like alone doing. It's like so fucking bold. It's funny and it's heartfelt at the mm-hmm. same time. Because some of your videos are very, very earnestly heartfelt. And this one, I felt was a real departure. I just loved the twinkle in your eye. But at the same time, there's something really vulnerable about being the only one. In earlier videos, she's got like the backup dancers. It's awesome. Because I read that you were inspired by like NSYNC and boy bands back yeah. in the day. Yeah. And you're yeah. fully doing all the like NSYNC moves. And I loved it.
Thank you.
But then in another video, she's so vulnerable. And I want to know, does anything ever scare you?
Wait.
Oh, well, yeah. Go ahead.
I'm sorry, Dad. But Julie, so you think that is a person, that's a character type. This is specific to her, that getting up on this stage. Haley, I'm asking you, do you feel like that's a thing about you, or do you feel like that's like a thing about people?
I think that's just a thing about certain people. I don't think everyone thrives on the stage. I don't think so. I know my girlfriend would be terrified if I threw her up there. But I can't speak for them because it's just my natural instinct to want to do that. I want that challenge. I love the pressure. I love all of the things that go into it. Would I like it to be a little easier? Absolutely. But it's just a part of my nature, I guess. I can't really take that away from me. I feel like my videos are really great representation for those who haven't listened to my music to really understand my journey and just my self-expression. I'm terrified of so much, even starting with my sexuality, really feeling like there was no space for me mm-hmm. as an actress, as a musician, knowing that I couldn't hide the gay. Right. Like I remember I would go to an audition, like mm-hmm. even like when I was like really young, like 12, 13 years yeah. old, and they'd be like, there's this edginess about you. If you could just take away that edginess, you would be perfect for this role. Oh. And when I look back on it, when I look back on these moments, I realize that edginess was this innate part of me, which was this gay confidence within me that I was trying to like change or alter. I've always been fearful of not being enough, not being worthy. And so like Gravel to Tempo, for example, like I think I always have vulnerability within my music videos. And that is such a lighthearted music video, but there's heart to it because mm-hmm. of the experience that I had growing up in school, feeling like an outcast, knowing that I deserve to be there, but how do I prove to others that I deserve to be seen and to be heard? And so there's like, there's always a layer of sadness in everything that I do because it comes from a very like
yeah.
vulnerable place of wanting to be respected, wanting to be enough, wanting to have a seat at the table or feeling like, why should I have to prove myself? You know? And so a lot of my creative endeavors came from survival, like writing music was me being alone, wanting to express my feelings and emotions. Dancing was a opportunity for me to be validated and surrounded by women because I didn't get that in my real life, right? And so all of these creative endeavors kind of came from this deep sadness of just not belonging or the society telling me that I didn't belong.
But you were not publicly gay until you released Girls Like Girls, correct?
In the music industry, correct. In the music industry, the 2015 Girls Like Girls was my coming out moment.
Prior to that, were you, I know you had toured, you'd opened for Justin Bieber, you were touring mm-hmm. as a
girl group.
But you were straight, you were assumed to be straight. Was that pressure, does it feel different now that that pressure is off of you? Like to tap something down. And I want to take it back to that thing you said about being in an audition and them saying you have this edge. Do you feel like some of that edge was about the keeping your gay hidden?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I had a very interesting experience with that girl group because as we all know, like boy bands, girl bands, it, for a long time, was just everyone was a heterosexual and that was it. There was no space to be other anything else. And so it was hard for me because I felt very vulnerable in a different way, where I was having to hide myself and also present myself to try to make men be attracted to me, because a lot of that job was selling sex, right? And even though we were so young, I was like 19 at the time, and still it was very much like I didn't attract the men, so I didn't get X, Y, and Z. You get to sing the one bridge, and you're the cool, edgy one, and we're going to put you here. And so it was a really interesting experience. And I was very grateful to finally get out of it and pursue my solo career. And I do feel a massive weight off of me, because I'm not, you know, I was acting at the time as well. Like I had booked Wizards of Waverly Place and all these like Disney things. And I'm like, oh my gosh, God forbid Disney knows I'm gay. Like there was a lot of weight of just masking it and hiding it and trying to fit, because I just wanted to perform. I just wanted to create. I just wanted to storytell. And it felt like such a, I felt like it was holding me back so much.
Did you have a close circle of people who knew you were gay with whom you felt you could be 100% yourself? Yeah. But then everybody was like, shh, never say anything. Don't say anything. I mean, that's got to be stressful.
It's very stressful. Yeah, it was very, I think it obviously added to the trauma of feeling like I didn't belong in the industry, or that I wasn't ever going to book a leading role in anything. Mm-hmm. Right. So it was really hard to navigate, but I was open with my friends and my family at that time. I was in a relationship at that time. Like, but I just was like, I have to hide it from the industry. They cannot know that I'm gay. And so the hilarity of it all is when I released 2015, my music video, Girls Like Girls, it changed everything for me.
There's probably a million reasons why, but I kind of want to know what the main reasons are. Like, were you scared of someone that you're close to looking at you differently? Were you scared of losing opportunities? Were you scared? Like, what was the core of the fear there?
I mean, it's a very complicated fear with many different layers, but I would say one of the main reasons when I directed Girls Like Girls, I didn't put myself in it. That was number one. I was like, I'm not going to put my face on this, because I want the story and the lyrics and the song to speak for itself. And I don't want my journey to distract from the overall arching story and meaning of this message that I'm trying to tell. And so that was step one. And then obviously when I was getting ready to premiere this music video, not obviously, but no one wanted to premiere it because they said it was too risque. And I get the word risque a lot because oddly enough, society has combined lesbians and risque together. It's not a risque music video for those who've seen it.
No, it's not. I've seen it. It's not risque at all.
It's the opposite of risque.
It's very heartfelt.
And when you say nobody wanted to, no one meaning like, what is who? Like TV networks?
Every
or like,
outlet. Every outlet that probably supports me now had said no to me at some
point. Were you repped with a label at the time?
No. I was an independent artist.
Okay.
I had this video. I went out. No one wanted to premiere it. Everyone had their own reason. But I was grateful because AOL premiered it. And I was like, AOL? Is AOL still around?
You've got mail.
I was like, AOL? They're like, great news. AOL's going to premiere it. I was like,
I don't know. Where do you find that in your mail? Is that like is it a channel online?
Like on the website, they put it on the site?
Yeah, it was on the site. So I was so grateful. And I was like, but I was terrified. And I think the main fear was, am I going to lose an opportunity to chase my dreams? And my dream was to be a pop star. My dream was to be an artist and so many other things. And so that has always been the most important thing to me, is to be able to have the opportunity to chase my dreams. And what will people say?
That pivotal moment right before you released it then, it could have gone the other way.
1,000%. I had so many people tell me that maybe I shouldn't release it. Within like, but the 24 hours before I dropped this video, and mind you, I was getting ready for like one of my first tours, and we were touring in an SUV Chevy. So this is the timeline. I had dropped the music video. Okay. Yeah. I believe three I don't know exactly the amount number, but 3 to 4 days after same-sex marriage was legalized. And then about 4 days after that, I was performing in a bar in Lansing, Michigan for 15 people. There was no green room. We're sitting in the car. I'm doing my makeup in the car. And my video hits 500,000 views. And at the time, I had 9,000 subscribers. So like, That's a lot of people.
Oh, yeah.
Like, that's crazy.
So, and then we had gone to Guitar Center. I have a video of me in Guitar Center. I'm like, and then literally the week after that, it hit 1 million. And then the week after that, it hit 2 million. And then the week after that, it hit 3 million. It was like one of those classic, you know, those movies that you watch when things go viral. It just kept going up and up and up. And it's at about 147 million views.
And this was all on AOL?
It was on YouTube, but it was premiered on AOL, okay. So it didn't have any push, no label, no nothing.
But people just found it.
People just found it.
So were you, actually, quick departure, this could literally be a yes or a no. Did performing in front of those 15 people, did that feel good?
It felt good to be able to play my music because being able to play live is one of my favorite things. I think I was sad that only 15 people showed up. I was hoping maybe like 50 people would be there.
Right.
So it was, I was sad. I was sad that there weren't as many people there.
Okay.
But I still had a great show and I enjoyed it and I had a great time. To answer your question, I don't have a yes or no. It's a kind of a complicated thing.
It's complex. Okay.
Yeah.
What goes through your mind when you walk into the venue, you get out of the Chevy Suburban? You were like, you know, making sure the mascara is dry.
Yeah, and you're like, sweating.
Yeah, and you're like, yeah. They did the sound check and you walk in, you're like, hello, Lansing. There's 15 people here. Do you just go close your eyes and you're performing as if it's to Madison Square Garden? Or are you kind of in the moment of this is a small room with very few people?
It's a combination of reading the room and what the room wants and needs from it. But I also try to give the show of my life every single time. Because guess what? You're not always going to have the best crowd.
Yeah.
You're not, there's going to be so many variables. And it's your job to put on an amazing show, whether it's five people or thousands of people. And I actually had one of my fans, and during that same time of my career, I had performed at the mall, I believe in Portland or Seattle. And it was a box like this big. And I just had my microphone and I had my track playing. I put lavender on my microphone just so it looked a little artistic. And I performed for maybe like 15 or so people. And I remember after the show, one of my fans came up to me and I was embarrassed. This was when I learned, and I believe that this was pre-Lansing, Michigan. She said to me, she was like, because I was like, I literally was embarrassed. I was like, sorry, there wasn't a lot of people here.
You're apologizing.
And then she said, you shouldn't care about it. It's five people or like thousands of people. Like every person who comes to your show has the best time. No matter how many people are there, they're still getting an experience. And also too, she was like, I know I'm going to see you in bigger venues and at the Staples Center one day and all these things. And so to hear her belief and knowing that she wasn't ashamed of the fact that I was like such a small artist, why was I carrying that weight? And why was I putting all that pressure on myself? Because she had a great time. And what was cool about that is that same fan came to see me at my first sold out show for my first album tour.
How did you find
really
each
cool.
other?
Now,
how did you
just
find
came.
Her?
I remembered her. And she came to my meet and greet prior to the show and I remembered her and she obviously remembered me and she was like, we did it. And I think the venue was like 800 people or something like that. And it was sold out and it was just so cool. So, you know, you need those experiences. It's part of the journey. I mean, I have done every single step and I'm still doing every single step and I'm nowhere near where I want to be. But I've come a long way when I look back.
You did the music video that now has 150 million plus views. You watch it like take off. Are you now thinking the ride is going to go fast now?
No.
You knew better.
I, No, I know better.
How did you know better?
How? Yeah, with 150 million views, I would be like, is the paparazzi outside right now? Do I need to start getting lash extensions? So I
am I about to be rich? Like, right. How did you know better? Did somebody teach you that? Or did you just, you study the industry?
My mom is an ice skating choreographer. And with that
keep
being
going.
Said, my mom is a very tough girl. And she didn't have a mom growing up. And so she was raised by her coach, essentially. And so her motherly instincts was to be more of a coach to me. So she really mentally prepared me for the worst and in the best ways. So I knew that once I got signed to the label, that was like my dream, right? I just wanted to be signed to the record. I knew that that was just the beginning. That I knew that that was like a restart where I was like, okay, now I begin. I've had so many moments where it's like, now I begin.
So what year did you get signed?
2015.
So and after Girls Like Girls came out. And so you were signed as an out lesbian solo artist.
They signed me for who I was. And that was so exciting. I didn't have to say, this is who I am. This is my dream. This is my vision. It was, here's my music video. Here's my vision. This is who I am. And they were like, we want to sign you.
Just for the scenery, like this scene work of it. Is that like in a room or is that an email like attached? Here's my dream. Here's my vision. Here's how much it costs.
I can't
hold
the attachment. God damn
it.
You have to send it in a different format.
I'm sorry. Your dream can't happen because it was too many megabytes.
It wasn't
in
a PDF.
In person. Yeah, it was a really awesome moment. You know, I got to fly out to New York and met with Craig Kelman and Julie Greenwald, like boss people, and they were, you know, really excited for me. They're the heads of Atlantic.
Word. Oh, okay. I've heard Julie Greenwald's name. I didn't know the other guy.
Chad is a musician. Chad is a musician. I can hear his hungry brain sucking
I love
up
when
this
you
information.
Say that. I mean, yeah, like I make music. I also just listen to so many rap podcasts. And so I'm comparing notes between what fucking Joe Budden teaches me and what you're saying right now. And it all, it's all matching up.
When you got to the label, the title of this, of my question is sex and selling sex. Because you said when you were in a girl band, you needed, you weren't getting the big solos and the big splashy parts of the songs because you were not selling sex in the right way to attract men, even though you were still not an out woman. And now you're out and you get to be whatever kind of sexy you want. Is there a different kind of sexy that is acceptable as lesbian Jesus, which is what your fans call you? Is there an expectation? Is there such a thing as being sexy in a way that is not cool with your fan base because it speaks too much to the male gaze?
No. No, the answer is no. My community and, you know, the LGBTQ plus community and my fans create this space to be free. And so my sexiness can come from being masculine. My sexiness can come from, you know, and honestly, that's always been the case. But I think a combination of society and my insecurities and lack of confidence was a great combination of me not feeling like I could be myself and internalized homophobia, all those things that come with it. And so being celebrated by my fans with that video and acknowledging, hey, I like girls too. And hey, I have those feelings too. Just opened this ceiling of me being like, oh, I can wear a baggy t-shirt and baggy jeans and be myself and also be sexy. And be attractive to people. Because I went to high school. No one asked me out to prom. No one, like, I never got to experience a cool, like, dates at the promenade. And you go to the movies and the guys are, like, flirting. Like, I never got to experience that. And so, to be honest, I just wanted validation from anyone. You know, like, I was just like, anything would be great, right? And so, my sexiness comes from my confidence that I have cultivated and grown and found compassion for. And I've, you know, always struggled navigating my masculinity and my femininity. And going back to the girl group, in my mind, being feminine was attractive mm-hmm. and being masculine was not. Mm-hmm. And was trying to navigate not having boobs, not, you know, not being able to do all the classic, you know, male gaze stuff. And that's why it was so hard for me to navigate in that time, you know, because we'd go into labels and we'd perform for a big, you know, top person and they wouldn't even look at me because I had short, spiky hair with bleach streaks and I would be the one person in jeans and like a baggy jacket or whatever. And yeah.
But now that you're out and as you are 100% in your own skin, you are, and you direct your own videos, you are very beautiful and sexy in those videos. You have the camera come in on your glossy face and your big juicy lips and you're in a bra and it's sliding off and you're making out with girls in bathrooms. It is very sexy. I'm trying to understand if being out allowed you, made you feel safe enough to be that kind of sexy. And then the second part of that question is, are you also allowed to feel insecure? Like the idea that I am an out, proud, gay woman and an artist, that you have to be that all the time. Or can you sometimes be like, I have my period. I have a zits. My fucking boobs hurt. I don't want to be sexy right now.
Yeah.
Are you allowed that?
We're all just human. Yeah. I hope I'm allowed that.
Yeah, but you're a pop star. Are pop stars human to the little girls that see them?
I mean, am I making a music video of my boobs hurting and having a zit on my face? No.
But it's an idea.
We all know
am
what's
I right?
Yeah.
It's
it might
thought.
Get more views, actually, now that I'm thinking about it. It might be a better approach.
Well, you were on stage with Taylor Swift performing Curious. And Taylor's in like a kind of a leotard. It's sparkly and boots. And she gives you like a 10-minute intro. And you come out and I'm like, oh, here it is. It's going to be... She's going to be in like a sparkly onesie too and like heels. And you were in baggy pants, baggy shirt and rocking out, dancing like a motherfucker. And I was like, oh, no fear. No fear. How comfortable were you in that moment?
Oh my God. I was shitting my pants.
You were?
Literally. Oh my gosh. Are you, Julie? I literally had never met Taylor at that moment. I had met her that day. And I showed up to her 70,000 sold out Gillette Stadium performance.
Wait, is that really how many people are there? 70,000?
Yeah, 70,000 people. I had never met her. She's the biggest pop star in the world. She so graciously was like, come, because I was on tour of Panic at the Disco at the time and I had a day off and her team reached out and was like, Taylor would love to perform Curious with you. And Taylor made her dancers and herself learn the choreography too Curious. And so I show up and we're at this huge thing. She has like a pyro person. They're like, what kind of fireworks do you want tonight? Like, I was just like, this is my dream. I was like, this is insane. I like slid under the stage. I like had to lay down, you know, parallel to the floor and it elevated me to the front of the stage. And as you see, I like come up under the stage. I was like, this is my NSYNC dreams. Like this is when I was watching NSYNC No Strings Attached when I was 8 years old, this is what I wanted. And so I came out of the stage. I'm wearing sparkly pants that are like over 100 pounds. They're gorgeous, but
heavy.
Oh my gosh, they're so heavy. But that moment behind stage when I was like hearing her perform her Reputation songs like before I went out, my stomach, everything in my body, I was like, I am not well. I was like, I am physically not well. And I had never performed that. I mean, oh my gosh, I've never performed for that many people as well with such an iconic pop star. And so I was dying the whole time. And as we were performing the song, you know, you're a performer, like you just, even when you're scared or if you have a scene and you're like, am I going to hit these moments? Am I going to hit these beats? You know, there's so much going on. You just show up, you get it done. And so I was on stage and then boom, 3.5 minutes later, it was over.
How do you feel you did?
I feel like I did pretty well under the circumstances at hand.
This was supposed to be your off day, right? So do you just stay ready all the time for Taylor Swift to call you and for you to have to go perform? Do you really get downtime?
Yeah. I mean, I get downtime. Like, I obviously have time where it's not, you know, like when I'm in album cycle, it's very busy. And so I just, once album cycle's over, I have downtime and, you know, get to write music and lots of self-care and all those things. But I don't know. When I was younger, my mom always said, you have to be ready for an opportunity. And if you're not ready for that opportunity might pass by you. And so I think I've always just mentally been like, I don't know when the opportunity is going to come, but if it does come, like, I have to show up if that's what I want. And so I think you just kind of get in a fight or flight mode in those circumstances. And it was really cool too, because I couldn't tell my band, my touring band, what was going on. And so I just told them, I was like, hey, I got tickets to the Taylor Swift concert. Let's go on our off day. And so they were in the audience. And
they were in the audience?
They were in the audience. And then all of a sudden, you know, with that long, gorgeous intro she gave me, and then so I came out, they were all like, oh my God.
Wow.
It was crazy.
I'm a huge Taylor Swift fan. She's a storyteller. And I love the evolution she's gone through.
I'm just going to say that I feel like my singing has never been like my number one. Like, I don't have a voice like Ariana Grande. I don't have a voice like Celine Dion, but I've always had a story to tell. And Taylor's always had a story to tell. And what I will say is I feel like we both did an amazing job. And
that's powerful to say that thing about a story to tell. You are a non-white person who is also gay, and you're on a bus driving through the United States. Sometimes I think about just literally like doing a cross-country trip, and where I get stuck is like, there's some places that I would have to stop where I feel like I wouldn't feel very comfortable. What's that like for you? Are you insulated from that? Or like,
that's a really, no one's ever asked me that question. And honestly, I talk about it with my team all the time.
Please tell everything.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, my first major tour, which was my debut album, Expectations 2018, we did a lot of shows. We went to the Deep South. I had a lot of very uncomfortable situations. And so I hired a security guard.
Mm-hmm.
So, and my guitarist, he's Ethiopian. And so he also was feeling, you know, like essentially like we don't stop the bus when we're driving through areas that we don't feel safe to go to the gas station and use the restroom. And so we have had some instances where we stopped in the city and we're like, you know what, let's keep going. And we just learned to avoid those areas. It's challenging because a lot of, there's gay people everywhere, and there's people of color everywhere. And so you want to facilitate a safe space for those shows. And so when I do like perform in Florida, for example, I have amazing shows because they need these shows.
They need the release.
They need to feel safe. They need a safe space to be queer and to just, even if they're not, they don't feel safe in their, under their own roof. And so it's important to have shows and to go to those places. But we're also very aware, most of my, you know, touring team are queer and, you know, people of color. And so it's just, you just have to be mindful of it, honestly. And to be honest, as we all know with concerts, it's like venue security is not always the greatest. And so I had to just hire someone who is on stage looking out in the audience who could have our backs. And
what are they looking for?
That's important.
Is he looking for somebody scowling at you? Or is he looking for somebody like about to haul a bottle at you?
He or she.
No.
Or she. That's right. Sorry. Right.
Honestly, a lot of it is not the show itself. Like a lot of it is just like walking in the area that, you know, I've had someone in a van pull over and flip me off and say, fuck you for just looking the way I look. Not even being gay, just like looking the way I look.
Just for being a biracial woman walking down the street, you exist and I'm going to flip you off.
Yeah. So, and my best friend's Mexican. So we're walking on the street. They don't like it, you know? And so you're just aware. But I think that overall, I've had a positive experience, but I'm also aware of that experience that you want it to be safe for the audience as well. So it's hard to navigate sometimes with venues and, you know, and everywhere you travel. So you just, you make sure you don't forget that as you're traveling, because you'll be in a situation, and you know, we've been in a situation when my team members has been called the N-word and we had to vacate the facility and go somewhere else. And so it's just, I don't know, it's just unfortunately a part of life.
You say we talk about it all the time, but it kind of sounds like it's not even a conversation anymore. It's just sort of, you're looking at the map and where you're going or the, on the computer, and you're like,
yeah,
let's try and get to the big city where, yes, where whatever the closest one to the venue is. And mm-hmm. everyone knows why. No one has to say why.
But also just being a woman, like my best friend and I, we're both women walking in the streets. Like we were in Virginia on this last tour. Mm-hmm. Where we were staying, because a lot of the venues are like in the heart of downtown in every city. And where we were walking was not safe. And we couldn't walk alone. Like I had to get, unfortunately, one of the guys to walk with us because we were being called at. We were not in a safe area. And so just even being a woman, like
right.
you have to think about that as you're traveling, because you're literally in a new city every single day. There's a lot of moving pieces and you just don't know, honestly. Right.
Does that juxtaposition, like one moment you're on a stage, people are yelling your own lyrics up at you. They're like, You're basically the most powerful person in the universe in as far as everyone in that room is concerned. Yeah. And then like an hour later, you're like, I got to figure out where I can go in this town to use the bathroom, like on the way out of here. Yeah. Like, does that fuck with you? Or are you just kind of like, keep it moving?
I keep it moving. I'm used to it now. Like, I think my first tour, it was a little unnerving. And, you know, sometimes when I do a show, I definitely feel, or if I'm in a city, a certain city, like I'll feel very other and just clock it and do my job, you know? But it's something that's just a part of my existence. And I've always looked the way I've looked, and I've always been very gay. And so, you know, even walking with my partner and holding hands and like just knowing that some people aren't exposed to that, or some people aren't, don't really know how to respond to that. And I think why I continue to do the art that I do is I want to expose people to it. I want them to realize that they have family and friends that are in the queer community that need to feel safe to live their life. Life is so short. And so my goal is to just normalize queer narratives. And I hope that that's what I can leave with my time on this earth, is to have music videos people can rewatch, to hopefully have movies they can go see, to be able to listen to a soundtrack and feel validated and maybe an experience. But also too, like my music is for everyone too. Like I grew up listening to hetero music my whole life. So it's like, I also just really speak upon heartbreak. And with my music videos and my visuals, I try to be bold to help normalize people's experiences.
To you though, when you're telling a story, you're trying to normalize a queer narrative, how much of you, as you're sitting down and whatever your writing process is, performing process, even getting ready to do a video for something that you've written, do you think, I have to go the step further? I can't retread. Or do you go, fuck it, this is the story I'm telling, I'm not going to worry about whether it's taking a further step down the road?
With every video I do, I always try to do something I've never done before, whether that's challenging myself with a different type of equipment, whether that's shooting on film, whether that's whatever it is, I always bring in an element. Like I did Feelings, which is a one take, a true one take music video. And like, that was so exciting to me. And so I always just trying to find ways to challenge myself and see how far I can go. You know, I've had a lot of people in the industry, unfortunately, be like, oh, like you're doing another video about a girl. Like, don't you have something else to say? And it's just kind of like, you can't really say that, because love and loss and heartbreak and life, like there's so many layers to it. And why can't I, you know, share all these experiences with different women, with people? And why is that, you know, deemed repetitive when so many hetero artists, that's what brought Taylor and I together, is I had made that statement, and Taylor, like, echoed me and was like, yeah, like we should be able to share our love, and it shouldn't be deemed repetitive just because of
right.
the person
no
that you're falling
straight
in love
people.
With.
No one's yeah. telling straight people to stop writing rom-coms.
Heartbreak songs. Yeah. Right. Think about how many artists are just singing about heartbreak and loss, and it's never repetitive. It's always new. It's always fresh. It's always a different perspective. And that's the same for queer people as well. And so I do, as an artist, I always try to do something different. And, but again, like going back to, you know, the music industry that we're in now, where music videos aren't really watched. It's more short form. It's more TikTok. So the resources are different. And so like, that's what I did that music video for the girls this year. I did like a reality version of
Oh my
the
God, it's hilarious.
Haley, when you say that there's people in, you've said this a few times, you're like, there's people in the industry, dot, 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 like people in the industry who want you to, who say like, don't you have something else to say, as an example? Mm-hmm. Are these like actual people in your life? What do you mean people in the industry? I'm curious.
Like top people, executives.
Like executives. And they
yeah.
come to you and they're like, we're tired of this same thing. Like, will you give us something? What do they want you to say? Like, who do they want you to be?
I don't know. They say, well, you've already done that. And you're like, oh, well, my sexuality isn't changing and my experiences are growing and it is different. That's why I think it's so helpful for this industry to continue to push newer stories and to create a space for expanding narratives, because there are certain people that are mentally in a different mindset.
That is astounding in 2022.
Chad,
I sound like
the
person
way.
I hate. I know, but I'm kind of just
the
like
the same way.
Because people want to believe that like the artistic industries are the most, you know, like on mm-hmm. the edge and like the most left leaning and all this shit.
What I hear her saying, though, is that they're encouraging her to go to push further, not necessarily to lay off the lesbian, but like change it up, make it, you know, sort of the Madonna reinvention idea. And I think that just personally, as somebody who has watched your videos and was blown away that you directed them all, you are adding and adding, and there's so much humor and there's always that vulnerability. I thought the Bachelorette one made me laugh so hard when the girl pulls up in the U-Haul.
Yeah.
I was like, oh my God, what does a lesbian bring to a second date?
But
it was
Julie,
the best.
That comes out of not having those resources and the budget that I need to tell a feature film level narrative, which is what I like to do. And so therefore I was brainstorming with Becca. I was like, I don't have these resources. What do I do? And she's like, well, why don't you just do a Bachelorette, like, you know, spoof? And I was like, that's genius, because we literally shot those on like Sony's. Like, it was very raw. Like, everyone did me a favor. Like, the entire, all the contestants were queer. They all literally did me a favor on this video. And it turned out amazing. But that's what's kind of fun about art, is that, you know, you create things out of necessity and also challenges, right? And so it was really funny. And then I did that music video, and then Bachelor in Paradise used my song for the girls on their promo video.
Oh,
on their promos for Bachelor in Paradise. And so it was so amazing, because this seed of like, oh, I don't have the resources, I can't shoot the video I want to shoot, to, oh, okay, let's shoot this Bachelor music video, to, wow, now Bachelor in Paradise used my song. That's pretty cool.
Well, that's the idea, that limitation and constraint breeds creativity. What would happen if somebody handed you $5 million and said, this is for your next video and you got to spend all of it? What would you do?
I mean, I'd make a fucking amazing
But it would like start with like explosions? Would there be like a helicopter and an action sequence?
Listen, I would love the $5 million, Julie. Are you kidding?
I know, but you're not.
Yeah, I think rich people made that saying up. I don't know.
Yeah,
man.
I was like,
I'm not sure. I don't. Yeah.
No,
that helps my creativity.
It does. Okay, so what's your dream then? What is your creative dream right now?
My dream is to obviously continue to hopefully have a career in music. I would love to continue to grow my fan base and perform and tour. I'm going to have a headlining tour next year, hopefully soon. And my dream is to make feature films and TV shows and direct and create, you know, safe spaces for people to dream and explore. And I think also too, for me, my main thing is hope and really wanting that in queer narratives. And so I've had, similar to the conversations we had about the videos, it's like I've had a lot of people in Hollywood tell me that my story or the film that I'm working on, where's the trauma? Why do we have to have that? Like that's the whole problem. This is the whole fight. And so I've been working on that. And eventually one day I'll be able to say that I did it. But it's been really interesting because I kind of pivoted and put my energy into the TV and film space and also hit a lot of walls of similar verbiage that I received.
So you've been actively developing television and movie stuff?
Yeah.
And writing or finding things to direct or both?
Directing. I'm directing a couple of projects and then I wrote a film as well. And so I've been working on those, but it's been really interesting how challenging. I just went to the Bros premiere last night and introduced myself to Judd Apatow. And I was like, thank you for making this movie. That'll help Hollywood fund more queer films. And I told him, I was like, I've been working on mine for 7 years. And he was like, well, we worked on ours for 5. And so it was very comforting and also challenging to think that Judd Apatow had
Judd Apatow took five years to get
the show made. I'm like, fuck, I'm screwed.
Are you finding like that your clout is transferable across mediums? Like, do you think that because people know you know how to tell a story through song and through visuals, like, do you feel like that is giving you street cred in the stuff you want to do in TV and film?
I hope so. I think so. We'll see.
Have you started being hired as a director for other things? Or I should say, have you put yourself out there for that kind of a thing?
I haven't because it's just so hard to just get my own projects made. Right. So I've been really putting my energy into that. And I hopefully in 5 years, we'll have a conversation and I'll be in a different place or an interesting place in my life. But yeah, I've just really just been focused on trying to create and challenging myself as a storyteller and how, I don't know, how to grow with the industry because the music industry has changed a lot and it will continue to change. Everything will continue to change, which is great. But also as a musician long-term, how do you keep up? Like we talked about in the very beginning of the podcast. So
this is from outer space, but what kids did you sit with in the cafeteria?
So that's a really thoughtful question, Chad. And no one has also asked me that question. We're getting
two for
really
two,
deep.
Chad.
Two for I'll two. Two I'll for two. I was the person that never sat at a table and walked to all the tables.
You just walked around.
So I was the person being like, hey, what's up? Like, blah, blah, blah. And then I'd go to the other table and be like, hey, what's up? And so like people thought that I was like popular to a degree because I, you know, I was friends with every kind of group, right? And I, you know, just tried to make myself as likable as possible. But then I was also that person on a Friday night who was never invited to anything because everyone already thought I had a group. Right? I never really had a group. So I'd be at home with my mom watching movies all weekend. But at the cafeteria, I was always just saying hi to everybody. Like, you know, but no one really knew where I actually sat and I didn't sit anywhere. I was just
But that was calculated so that you didn't have to feel rejected by any one table?
Yes.
That's your movie. That's the opening
that's
of your movie.
That's sweet. You're an attractive person.
Thank you, John.
I like your style. I've been like taking little notes of your, I wore some pearls the other day because someone pushed me to do it. Yeah. And they were like, and I really was, I was really feeling it. And I like your pearls. But the question is like, have you had to sort of face like, I guess like male, what's the word? Like male heterosexual, like fragility in dudes, like being attracted to you and you not, and you just like, there's nothing there for them. Like how, like, is that, I mean, is that, that feels like it would be a thing that would be always present, but maybe not so much, maybe not as much as I think.
My experience, right. There's like amazing guys. And then there's also people that I think a lot of lesbians experience guys being like, oh, well, you haven't met the right guy. Like, that's right. That's the classic liner. How does sex work? Or how does that actually work? And it's like, I am not your teacher. Please go Google that yourself. Like, goodbye. So I've obviously had those interactions, and that normally happens like going out to a bar or something, like, you know, where the taste of men is not ideal. And then obviously there are some great guys out there that are very respectful and understand that I'm not interested whatsoever. But I honestly didn't really get that much like attention from guys. And to be honest, like if a guy like even gives me attention, even today, I'm like, oh, wow. even though I definitely don't have any interest, that really makes me feel good. Like, I'm like, word. Because growing up, I just never, like, I would have loved for someone to be like, hey, you want to go to dance with me? And I would have no interest, but I would just like to know that I could maybe fit in, right? And like, all of it is like, why are we trying to fit in when like we deserve to look the way we look and present the way we present and feel the way we feel? And growing up, unfortunately, I was in that mindset.
Were you
navigating school?
You said you were out to your family and your friends pre-2015, and girls like girls. When were you out to your friends and family, or were you always out?
No, I had I knew I was gay since I was 5, so I was a very early bird. And I came out to my parents in 6th grade. They said it was a phase. And then I went through a really bad heartbreak in high school where I locked myself in the garage and cut all my hair off and didn't leave the room for like 2 days. And so then my mom came in and I told her again that this was not a phase and that this was a real situation. And then we didn't really talk about it. And then when I was maybe like 19, 20, I was open with my friends. And because that's when I started, like I had an experience with a girl and started dating. And
But the heartbreak was with a girl.
Yeah.
But it was quiet. It was a secret relationship.
Yeah. It was, we were like in a relationship. But then when I went to kiss her, she said, like, she basically gaslit me and said, like, what are you talking about? Like, I'm not interested in you. And then showed up with a boyfriend the next day. And then we never spoke again. So that was like my traumatizing moment of like, and looking back at all my experiences and like crushes, it's so crazy because they all did like me back. But I was so gaslit thinking that I was this crazy person projecting that maybe they liked me. That I always felt crazy growing up. Like, that was Crazy by Gnarls Barkley was one of my favorite songs because I was like, this is my song.
It's my theme song. Did you go to college after high school?
No, I did get into NYU. I did get into NYU.
And you said no.
And then I deferred because I booked, I started
Wizards.
Acting. Yeah, well, yeah. I think I had booked Lemonade Mouth. And that was my like big moment, you know, like my first like, you know, lead role in a movie. And it's so funny because that character, people love that movie. And that character was like a rebel and she stood up for what she believed in. And her motto was be heard, be strong, be proud. And at that time, I still wasn't out. And so it's just so funny because that character specifically really foreshadowed a lot of what ended up happening in my career later down the line in my personal
life. The character wasn't gay.
No, but I was flaming gay. Yeah, like everyone who watches it, they were like, Stella was my gay awakening. And like, she was just obviously gay, but you know, they didn't talk about it.
What form of creativity challenges you the most?
Album cover designs.
Really?
Really? Yeah.
It's my nightmare. It's
how much do they matter with streaming? Like, isn't everything?
They don't. Okay, Julie, they don't matter as much, but they matter to me.
They matter to you.
I bet they matter. It's just, I mean, I can still remember looking at like Led Zeppelin and sitting on the floor and looking at House of the Holy and opening up the whole thing and all the liner notes. Mm-hmm. And like, it was half the experience. But now I couldn't tell you even of like some of my favorite artists. I don't know what the cover their cover art looks like because I'm just streaming it.
Haley, you don't go, like, you don't have just like a vision pre-baked, like, when this thing comes out, I'm slapping this image on it that I got to find a way to get to.
No, that's not necessarily what I'm saying. I'm saying, like, I obviously have a vision. Like, when I write music, I see this world. And even for my new album, Panorama, that's out now, I saw this world with this, like, this. I was lucky because I saw it. And it was just this rainbow. And it was, like, after the fire, after the rain comes the rainbow. Like, was, like, this is the world I'm going to create. But I really struggle with having one image define years of experience and growth. And one image, a still image, to tell people where you were at as a creative.
That is impossible.
It's daunting.
It is impossible.
Daunting.
It is so hard. And if you see my album cover for Panorama, it's just my face because I decided that was my journey. My journey was putting myself in the forefront because I love to let everyone else shine. Yeah. And it's very vulnerable for me to just put my face in front. It's so much easier for me to have some cool carpets and colors and this and, you know, and so that's what I did for this album. But album covers to me really give me nightmares because it's so hard to tell someone who you are, what you are, where
in
you are.
In one photo.
In and one the still image. And then it's going to be this
Holy
bit,
shit.
Like a small square.
You look
on
great.
Scenes.
Did you just pull it up?
I'm
pulling it up.
So what's cool about it is it's my face. And then when you open the album, you see the panoramic world. So the concept is, wait, have you seen the view? And like seeing the bigger picture.
Oh, I've seen this picture.
And so then you open it and you see this whole vast valley that I'm in with rainbow puddles and like a rainbow and all these things that we created.
God, cool. Yeah, look at, I mean, like for viewers, I mean, damn.
I
had seen that. I just didn't see, I'd seen this picture, but I didn't know it was the album cover. And I know that I sound really, now I sound like a real dinosaur. Are there albums again?
Yeah, there's albums.
I didn't know this.
My CDs
I didn't
now.
Know this.
Yeah.
CD? No, that doesn't make any sense. CDs?
No, Gen Z love CDs. They love tape cassettes.
Vinyl. I get tape cassettes because that is so different. You can make mixtapes, which was like my whole childhood.
Yeah, but when you like time it out so it transitions into the next song and then you re-record
and you're also
it on
like
your tape cassette.
Sending a message.
Yeah.
And like if somebody gives you one, you have to listen to the whole thing in order and be like, what's the the message?
Yeah.
I like
Do
you,
they
but
like
not
me?
In that way.
Yeah, like, where are we?
Where are we? And the answer was lie somewhere on the B side. Like that was such a big deal. But I can't imagine a CD sitting there with a CD and doing that. That's insane. We have someone who does research and she said that you never use the word quit. Is that true?
Yeah.
Are you trying?
Is that on purpose? Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's like building neural pathways. I think when I was navigating a lot of like depression, it's just so, it's once you've said like, I'm going to quit or all these things, like you start to believe it. And so I think I really believe in like positive affirmations and like not speaking in that way to yourself because
so using your language
important. Yes.
What do you want to make room for in your life?
I want to make room for more joy. I think my like most important thing in this next album cycle is really enjoying the highs, enjoying the lows, which can be really hard.
How do you enjoy the lows?
By knowing that things will get better eventually. And that I have to, you know, my mom always says, you have to go through the lows to get to the highs. Yeah. Like you have to, like you just have to. And like you, something amazing will happen. And then all of a sudden, boom, you're down to the ground. And as an artist, you're on this massive roller coaster and knowing that you're going to go through another low, but it's going to bring you to another high. And so you have to keep going. You can't give up and you have to advocate for yourself. And so I think my focus right now is allowing joy into my life and appreciating patience and where I'm at, knowing that, yes, I want to be in 4,000 places at once. I want all of these things for my life and for my future, but where I'm at is where I'm supposed to be, and things will align the way they're supposed to align. And like a great example is literally my song For the Girls. I was supposed to release it last summer, mm-hmm. and I had finished it in August, and summer was over. And so I had rewritten. I was like, okay, I'm going to take out the word summer. I was like trying to make it happen. And they were like, no, we're not going to release it. You have to wait till next year. And I was devastated. And then it released this year, and it all worked out because my girlfriend was ready to be open and share our love with everyone. My song was the opening song for Do Revenge. It was on Bachelor in Paradise. They had all these opportunities that if I had released it last year, like those opportunities might not have happened. And so I always just, it's really hard to convince yourself that things are going to work out, but
yeah,
it's good practice, like neurologically, to just be like it is, and you're going to get through this. Like when I look back at all the challenging times and performing in Lansing, Michigan, all these things, it's like, I've overcome so much, and all of those moments were worth getting to this moment. And I'm going to have so many more of those moments in the future. And so just accepting that the journey is going to be hard, but there's also going to be some magical moments, and that's worth it.
And in order to make room to let that in, to let the joy in, to let the being in the moment in, to let yourself experience highs and lows, is there anything you need to push aside or get rid of?
Sometimes I have to just quiet my thoughts in my in my head, because my thoughts are always trying to do 4,000 things at once, and it wants a lot of things, and I'm just not capable of doing that. Like as a human being, to do things right, you have to be focused, and you have to do things one at a time. And so to create space for joy is the active effort of acknowledging the voices in my head going, you're not doing enough. You need to post a TikTok. You need to post this. You need to do that. And being like, hey, I know you're scared, but you're going to be okay. And I need space right now.
Sounds like a figure skating coach, something a figure skating coach would say.
It sounds like really solid advice. It does. It sounds really amazingly solid. Well, I didn't want to force you to say the word quit, so I wanted to use your language.
I'm trying to think of something I have quit, though.
Well, you quit being in the closet, and I know that probably feels like old news, but it sounds like you there's a lot of evolving that's going on all the time. And I mean, you're a human. You're not just a pop star. You are a human. And I think it means a lot to a lot of the people listening who think, oh, I see these people up on a stage and they're so beautiful and shiny. And, or I see them shiny. You're so shiny in your videos. Like the skin is glassy and beautiful. Getting there it's a process. You get to enjoy that part, but it doesn't stay that way. You're not like on this perfect high all the time. I just really appreciate you sharing it all with us. We love Becca. I was so surprised how much I love Becca. I know you love Becca, but I was like, oh, Becca, she's so funny and odd and cool. And I just dig her. Does she go on tour with you?
She came to 9 shows. Yeah. So she came by. It was so much fun having her there. And I'm so glad you love her too, because she's just so funny and such a light. Like she's just, I feel like every person she speaks to, they feel better walking away. And like, that's what I love about her.
Wow. That's high praise. That is high praise for your
well
woman.
Well said. That feels well workshopped.
Yeah. That was, wow. But it's also,
it's the truth.
When you're on stage and you know that, okay, you got a sold out, you got 1,200 people in the house and you've had 5 shows, no Becca. And then there's one, and then the next 2 are Becca. Are they different for you inside?
Yeah, it's so exciting. And she loves watching me perform. She loves my dancing. So
your dancing's amazing.
Yeah, she goes for the dancing, loves the dancing. And it changed the whole environment. Like we had a show in New York, and we had 2 shows in New York. And the second night, my entire team, like my drummer, my guitarist, and myself, we all had our partners in the audience. And the energy just shifted. Like, you could feel guitarist, it. He was like playing for his wife. Like, he was like on the ground. Like, yeah! Like, he was just killing it. Like, he, you know, it was just, it's so fun. You know, it's fun to get to share that with people that you love.
That's incredible. Well, thank you so much. And thank you for the education and for being so vulnerable offline. I mean, I could pick your brain for 17,000 hours about directing. I'm really impressed by what you do as a director. It's thank really, you. You're like self-taught and you took $100 and turned that into a thing. And I'm just like, I've got a lot to learn from you. That was fantastic. So thank you.
That means a lot. Thank you. I'm a big fan and a massive supporter of you and both of you. And thank you so much for having me on your podcast. I also could talk to y'all for hours. So it was a great time. And we'll do it again.
Thank you, Haley.